This is Digital Story Podcast number 939, March 19th, 2024. Today's theme is Photography's Most Powerful Teacher, Failure. I'm Derek Story. The idea of what is successful and what isn't has been swimming around in my head lately. I'm sure a big part of it was our photo critique workshop that just wrapped up. Those discussions about how we view our pictures versus the reactions to them by others were fascinating. So I decided to share a story with you about the secret to good photography. All of this and more on today's TDS Photography Podcast. I hope you enjoy the show. So we think there is so much to learn about photography, about being an artist, all those good things, and there is. But the thing about it is that often we think what we need to learn are more the technical things, like, you know, where the light should come from, or how do we get the color we want, and all that good stuff. And to some degree, that's definitely true. That's definitely a big part of it. But how do we learn that stuff, right? Do we just read it in a book or a magazine article? Do we watch a training video? Do we learn from other photographers? Well, yeah, the answer to that is yes. All of those things will definitely help us progress. But then there's another ingredient to all of this that we sometimes overlook. And this ingredient is just between ourselves and the camera. And so I want to read you a story right now that I wrote relating to all this. I'll talk about it a little bit more, and then I have lots of other good stuff today to discuss. But first, let me read you the story about the secret to good photography. I was working in a camera bag booth at a birding show on a muggy Florida afternoon. Since most of the visitors were birders, not photographers, we didn't have much to offer them. I wasn't even sure why we were there. Quote, maybe your spotting scope will fit in this lens case, end quote, I said cheerfully, trying to get the zipper to close. By 2 o'clock, I was numb with boredom and my feet were tired. 3 hours to go before air conditioning and a cold beer. I was already hungry and open to any distraction that would pass the time. An elderly lady walked up to the booth with a DSLR in her hand. I figured that she was more photographer than birder, so I straightened my posture and met her eye to eye. May I ask you a question? She said, still a few feet from the counter. Of course. I just finished a photography class, and the instructor said that I wouldn't get any quality pictures unless I shot in manual mode. He showed us how to do that, but for the life of me, I just can't remember. I studied her for a moment and saw that she was clearly perplexed. She then extended her arms toward me with the camera in hand, as if it were a peace offering. Can you help me? She asked. Where do I begin? I thought as I accepted the camera. Using manual mode requires some understanding of the exposure triangle, aperture, shutter speed, and ISO. There's no magical manual mode setting. She would need to know how the camera interacts with light. I wasn't sure how to answer her. Then I had an idea. May I offer an alternative approach? I asked. What if I set your camera to program mode, then you can just go about taking pictures and not worry about the exposure settings? Oh, no, that wouldn't do at all, she said with anxiety in her voice. Why's that? I replied. Well, my photography teacher was very clear that program mode is for people who don't know what they're doing, and their pictures would be inferior. I don't want bad pictures. I stepped back from the counter to grab a stool. Do you mind if I sit while we talk? The humidity seemed to be getting to me, and I was feeling a bit tired. Oh, please, she said. I positioned the stool in front of her, took a quiet breath, and changed tack. Okay, I'm going to offer a different opinion than your photography teacher. It's true that manual exposure mode is good for some situations. I use it myself at times. But if you're in a hurry to get a shot, such as trying to record an egret that you happen upon, program mode is actually better because the camera does all the thinking for you and you can just concentrate on framing the shot. But the pictures won't be any good, she quickly responded. Odds are, actually, they'll be better, I replied. She thought about this for a moment, then extended her hands, motioning for me to hand her back the camera. Well, thank you for your time, she said. I will find someone who knows how to use manual mode. She turned and walked away. A few hours later, I was sitting at a square wooden table in a Mexican restaurant. I had already eaten half a bowl of tortilla chips and finished my beer. The server was nowhere in sight. I wanted to place an order for dinner. I was ravenous. It felt like eons since she said she would be right back. My mind drifted to the earlier conversation with the elderly woman. I'm also a photography teacher, I thought. What kind of messed up things have I done to my students? I took another chip and dipped it in the red salsa. I was trying to pace myself, but they tasted good. There are many debates in photography, raw versus JPEG, full frame versus crop sensor, film versus digital, and the pros and cons of altering the images in post-production, just to name a few. We could spend more time arguing than actually taking pictures. I spotted the server emerging from the kitchen. I made eye contact and smiled. She headed in my direction, but was stopped by a group of four at another table. They seemed very chatty. I hate sounding like some gray area, wishy-washy academic, but there's no one way to take a good picture. Photography is that rare craft that thrives on experimentation, exploration, and yes, sometimes utter failure. That's it, I said out loud. The secret to good photography is failure. She won't succeed because she's afraid to fail. She needs not only to try program mode, but every other setting on that dial. No one is keeping score. In baseball, you're a star if you hit a single a third of the time. Photography is even more forgiving. One great shot out of 20 is fantastic. Who cares about the other 19? The last thing that I want to do is smother this craft beneath the weight of rules and opinions. I made a promise to myself right there in that restaurant that I will forever champion failure in my teaching and writing. I picked up the beer glass to toast this affirmation, tilted my head back, and drained the last few drops from the bottom. When I lowered the glass, she was standing there. "Looks like you could use another cold one," the server said. "And would you like to order?" She was a vision of hope. Her presence represented all that was good with the world, and in that moment, my cares washed away. "Oh yes," I said, smiling. "I would love to." This story came to mind because during our photo critique workshop, I was very impressed by many of the participants willing to take risks with their photos and then show them to us, knowing that we were going to discuss those pictures and how we felt about them. That's no easy thing. That takes a fair amount of courage. Of course, that gets easier the more that you practice it. You know, when you're experimenting with things, and you're going, okay, I'm not sure which one works better, this one or that one, this approach or that approach. The thing about it, even when you find out what approach worked better, the other approach then, by definition, is a failure or falls short, let's say. And so this is just built into the craft. This is built into the artistic process that as you try different things, some things are going to work out better than others. And if we embrace that and just keep trying things and trying to learn from what worked and what didn't work and then incorporate that into the next generation, to the next iteration, then we can grow as artists. So I just wanted to talk about this today because I was so impressed with the folks from our photo workshop, how they embraced all of this and how they were diametrically opposite of this dear old woman in my story. One phrase that I use in our photo critique workshop is that you are the CEO of your pictures. You can listen to everyone's opinion. You can read all the articles about it. You can do all that. But in the end, you're the one that's going to make the decision about any given photograph that you take and share with other people. Adobe Interview. Quote, "We're not trying to trick anyone with AI." This is an interview that was published on amateurphotographer.com, and I have the link to the entire interview in the show notes, but I want to read you a little bit about it right now. So Amateur Photographer attended a show called Exposure, X-P-O-S-U-R-E, and they had a chance to sit down with Julianne Kost. And she's Adobe's best-known digital evangelist. Many of you know Julianne as well. She is a fantastic teacher. The thing about Julianne that always made me laugh, especially in the early days when I was trying to learn Photoshop, is that I would go to one of her events, watch her speak, and she would show me all this. She's clicking and doing all this. And I was going, wow, that looks not too hard. I can do that. And so I'm just all excited and everything. And then I would, get back to my computer like the next day or the weekend or whatever. And I would do like the first thing she showed and then the second thing. And then I'd be totally lost. I go, how did she do that? She made it look so easy. She was just one of those people that could do that. Now, she's also a terrific photographer. And I think she's also one of the people that can speak for what Adobe's doing. She is their evangelist. She has been with them forever. So the folks at Amateur Photographer sat down with her and they asked her a few questions about Adobe and AI and all of this stuff. And I'd like to read you some of that interview because I think it's fascinating. All right, here's the first question. Was Adobe surprised by the amount of interest and comment, positive and negative, generated by the introduction of the AI-generated generative fill tool in Photoshop? Julianne. I wouldn't say that we were surprised. We knew we were onto something and had done so much work internally on AI and then generative fill and Photoshop that I think everyone saw the significance that it could have and how it could help not only photographers but also designers and anyone else working with imagery. Question. How does Adobe respond to the accusations that has opened the floodgates to fake imagery and failed to realize the existential threat that AI could present to the integrity of photography? Julianne. I'm only really speaking for myself here, but I have found the AI features to be really quite helpful. And of course, the generative fill wasn't the first foray for Adobe into AI. We had neural filters and the removal tool, etc. for a while. So there have been a lot of different ways that AI helped me as a photographer. Not to fix images, but when you can't get maybe a particular shot. Maybe you're on a boat and you're trying to use a tripod and it's hard to get a long exposure. Or when you don't have a wide angle lens and you're trying to stitch images together and you don't take it quite properly. I'm not a photojournalist. I'm not trying to trick anyone with my photography. In my work, I'm more concentrated on trying to show the emotion that I felt when I was in the location. I want to show the beauty of an iceberg, for example, so I take out other unwanted elements using generative fill or something. It's helping me tell my story and get emotion across to the viewer. Question. So it's safe to assume that we will see more AI-powered tools in Photoshop and Lightroom, such as the very useful and quick sky and subject masking tool in Lightroom Classic. I would assume so, Julianne says. I don't have a crystal ball that I can share with the world, but I think anything that can help users with mundane editing is great. We don't want to sit there and create a mask on a sky for an hour and a half that we can just press a button and enhance and make it look like what we want in order to tell the story. That's fantastic. And finally, question. Do you think we might get to the stage where camera and phone makers are able to integrate so many editing tools, including AI, into their products that third-party editing software like Adobe's might no longer be needed? Julianne. I think that's a really good question. Large camera or phone manufacturers are already doing this via computational photography, but they have a lot of other things they need to think about as well. The quality of Adobe's image editing tools are just so fantastic. Yes, I could use a preset, but knowing how to get the most out of it using the underlying tools will help you get to a higher level much faster. So I thought this was interesting, some very straightforward answers from Julianne to some questions about AI. And of course, the ultimate answer here is, I think we are all knowing what that is, which is this is here to stay and we're going to see more of it. It's going to be interesting to see what direction Adobe goes with it. But there also seems to be no apology whatsoever for how far we've come right now. As I said, this is the interview on amateurphotographer.com, and you can get the link in the show notes. I want to talk about the digitalstory.com website for just a second, because I've been working on it. This site has been around for, a while now, right? I mean, we have over 900 podcasts. That alone will tell you how long this site's been around. So I've been reworking some of the ad tiles on it. And one of the things that I discovered over time is that advertisers and sponsors, they really want to get more sophisticated with their advertising tiles. In other words, they want information rotating through the tile. They want all sorts of stuff happening. They want tiles popping up. And I noticed that, for example, Google, without talking to me, just started adding some pop-up sort of advertising on the site. And I'm going, nope, we're not doing that because I don't like that. And other sites that have stuff popping at me the whole time, I find super annoying. So I'm going, no, we're not doing this. So I got together with my system administrator, David, and I said, I want to do a couple things here. I want to make sure that this site is not annoying. So that's goal number one. And so we just stripped out all of the Google advertising code out of the site. I just said, I know that there's no way to control this, so we're just going to get rid of it. So we don't have Google ads on the site anymore, and that's just fine with me. Okay, so that's the number one thing. So you're not going to have any pop-ups coming at you. You're not going to have any stuff showing up on the site that you go, why is that on his site? I didn't put it there. They did, right? None of that is going to happen at all. All right, so that's the first thing. The second thing, I made all the advertising tiles on the site static, and they link to a specific location. So now the B&H tile on here links to the B&H homepage, which shows you the deal zone and everything, you know, all right there. So you have everything that you need to know about B&H, and you just go bang right to the homepage there. And then if you want to search for something, you can. I really encourage you that if you're going to go shopping on B&H or if you're going to go shopping on Amazon, if you would use these tiles first, that really helps support the site. That really helps pay the bills, because those are affiliate tiles with affiliate links. Doesn't cost you anything at all, but it really helps us out as we pay the bills for running this website. So the B&H tile now is absolutely static and it goes to the homepage. Same thing for the Amazon photo tile. That takes you to the electronics section of Amazon, and then you can search for what you want there. And again, if you're going to buy anything on Amazon, if you would click on that tile first and then go buy what you're going to buy, that would be fantastic. And that's the Amazon photo tile. Now I have a tile on here for the workshops that takes you directly to our workshops page. I have the Patreon tile on here that takes you to our Patreon page. Kalari Vision, for those of you interested in infrared, that's on here. And then I have some new things on here that I'm pretty excited about. Now that we're coming into spring, I'm going to start talking more about outdoor photography, camping and photography, things like that. And I've been testing tools to make that a more enjoyable experience, right? So I have a couple tiles on here, one for Jackery solar generators, which are these terrific little power plants, but they're super compact, that you can bring along when you're out and about, whether you're camping or just out for the day, that will power all of your devices, that will recharge your batteries, that will do all that stuff. And then if you want to recharge them, if you're going to be out for an extended period of time, then solar panels plug into them and they recharge really fast. Now, the efficiency of solar panels these days and the efficiency of these generators these days have increased greatly. And so this is a very practical approach. Now, I even use them in the studio itself, and I've cut down my grid electricity use a lot. So I'm going to be talking about that and writing about all that. But there's a tile on here for Jackery, and you get 10% off by using that tile. I also have a tile for Bodega Cooler, which is another item I'm going to talk about. Instead of fooling around with ice chests, these refrigerated coolers now are all the same sizes, and you don't have to use ice, and they work amazingly good and use very little electricity. Of course, if you combine the cooler with the Jackery solar generator, then, you know, you can basically just go forever and never have to worry about getting ice again or things getting soggy, all that. So there's a tile for Bodega Cooler there. Of course, we have a tile for Red River Paper, our longest running sponsor. Have a new tile for the podcast, and then have an updated On One tile for On One Photo Raw 2024. These are all nice, clean, attractive, static tiles that you can just click on and they take you where to go. Nothing's going to be jumping out at you anymore. So I just wanted to take a minute to go over the changes here and just remind you, if you're going to shop at B&H, if you're going to shop at Amazon, if you're looking to get into renewable energy or solar generators or using electricity out and about, if you're going to treat yourself to a really nice cooler, I have tested all of these items. I'll be writing about them, and I have tiles for them on the digital store. And if you stop by and click on the tiles first and then do your shopping, I truly appreciate it. And the page just looks so much nicer now. So thank you for bearing with me as all these kind of weird things started happening to the page. But we're all cleaned up now, and we're all ready to go. How Nikon and the French press in Paris are seeking to ensure authenticity in photojournalism. This is an article on fstoppers.com, and there's a link in the show notes. Let me read you a little bit about this. I think this is fascinating. By the way, there are a number of initiatives like this running in parallel right now. Leica has one going. There's another one that I can't remember right now is going. So this is not an isolated thing, but there's some good information in this article that really helps me anyway understand what's going on a bit better. Let me read you what they have to say. Nikon and AFP are collaborating on a practical verification system to ensure image provenance in the field of photojournalism. Recently, I spoke to Nikon about their plans for the function as well as how it might help viewers and photographers in the modern age. Undoubtedly, you've heard some variation of the following saying, believe none of what you hear and only half of what you see. Well, I think we all can agree that in the modern age, even believing half of what we see is getting harder and harder. It used to be much easier. A photographer would capture a moment on film, and there you had it, proof of the event. Then came digital. Suddenly, the chemical reactions of film were replaced by an assortment of ones and zeros, and every image created was now easily malleable through the use of software like Photoshop, which could transform that genuine moment into something decidedly ungenuine in a matter of seconds. Journalism, a field based on the very foundation of reporting of truth, was faced with a new threat to its integrity. Readers needed to believe that what they were being told was truth. So photojournalists needed to devise and follow strict guidelines to hold their work accountable to that special bond they had with their readers. But then came the rise of artificial intelligence. Now, not only is it possible to Photoshop an event after the fact to shape a narrative in a dishonest manner, it is now possible to create photorealistic depictions of events that never occurred, whole cloth, from the comfort of one's own home without ever needing to own a camera in the first place. To help address this issue, Nikon collaborated with the AFP, a news agency based in Paris, to start a practical verification system for use in the field of photojournalism. The goal is to protect against the falsification and/or unauthorized use of imagery and streamline the fact-checking process. The team responded that when adding C2PA metadata to a camera, Nikon performs digital signing using its camera-specific private key on the metadata. This means that while a plagiarist may be able to manipulate the image data, they cannot disguise the C2PA metadata, including the digital signature specific to Nikon cameras. The team is developing an invisible electronic watermark that would be merged directly into the image data itself. Therefore, even if a plagiarist manipulates the image and removes the metadata, it still can be detected through the watermark. So then the article gets into more detail about how this is actually going to happen in terms of technology. And then they wrap up with, this partnership between Nikon and the AFP is a definite step in the right direction. We live in an increasingly digital world where it can seem impossible to know what is real and what is fiction. Tools like this, which are designed to help provide clarity to the public and protection for artists, are going to be increasingly necessary as we go forward. The stronger the bond between those who create the images and those who consume them, the stronger our level of trust will be going into the future. So the gist of this, and when you go to the article and you read the actual details of how this happens, it gets fairly technical. And you go, okay, I'm not sure I quite understand this, but I understand what you're trying to do. And what we're trying to do is find a way for photographers to not only protect their images from plagiarism, but then also for viewers to be able to understand what they're seeing was an actual captured image by a photographer and who that person was. So I think this would go a long ways toward helping us distinguish between images captured with a camera and whose camera they were captured with, and then images that were solely generated via AI. And if we could even have that, I think that would be a huge step forward to helping us sift through what the heck is going on, you know, as we see images stream across our computer screen via the internet. What is real, what isn't? This could help a lot. All right, let's take care of a little virtual camera club business. A big thanks to our Patreon members, those folks that have joined the inner circle. We have a Patreon tile on all the pages of The Digital Story, as I just talked about. And these folks support this community, support this podcast, and help keep terrible ads out of our podcast. A big hats off to them. They have their own area, their own space on Derek's Story Online, where they get to hang out with each other and they get discounts on all of our workshops. Please join us in 2024. Click on the Patreon tile. You can sign up there. And then the next thing you know, you'll be getting an invite to Derek's Story Online and join the Inner Circle space. A big thanks to our Patreon members for supporting this podcast. And finally, a huge hats off to our friends at Red River Paper, longest running sponsor of The Digital Story. They also have a tile on all the pages of The Digital Story. Yes, inkjet printers can make us crazy, but I have discovered that the more I learn about them, the far less crazy I get and the far more artwork I have coming out of my inkjet printer. Red River Paper can help you with all of that. They can help you with knowledge through their articles. They can help you with great supplies at very reasonable prices. They can help you with reviews, and they can help you match the kind of paper that you need to the kind of projects you want to have, get you up and running, printing successfully, not pulling out your hair, and really enjoying the whole process. They're the longest running sponsor of the Digital Story. I have a terrific Facebook page at facebook.com/Red River Paper, and a huge thanks to them for supporting this show. All right, it's going to do it for me this week. I hope you enjoyed everything. I'll be back next week with more good stuff. Until then, stay safe, take some pictures. See you next Tuesday. Bye-bye now.